mask, Scorpion would have looked quite charming. The head and shoulders of a Sudani brigand listening to the orders which Sadat was giving for their departure. The odds are you'll never meet one of the Sudani criminal classes, so I'll tell you that this representative looked like an indescribably evil cathedral gargoyle, hook-nosed and vulpine, with a tuft of beard, a steel cap with chainmail ear guards over black hair falling to his shoulders, and a grinning mouthful of jagged yellow tusks. Happy the bride who wakes up to see that on the pillow, thinks I, and was damn glad when he moved out of sight. Presently they left the nave, and we heard them mounting up, but by mutual consent, and not a word said, we stayed put until dawn, by which time we reckoned they'd be well away. It was not comfortable, for with those fine specimens of Buthus arachnidae rustling about on the floor, we don't sit or lie down, and while, like the Sudani, we were well shod against their stings, I found myself wondering if the horrid little buggers could climb or jump. My legs were painfully cramped by the time daylight began to filter through the broken trap, but after chafing some life into them and satisfying myself that all seemed quiet, chez Scorpio, I took three hasty strides, hurled back the trap, and swung myself out. Ulaba quickly followed, and there we were, chilled to the bone, at dawn, in an empty church in a ghost city, and not a thing to bless ourselves with except the clobber we stood in, my Jocelyn and cartridge belt, and Ulaba's knife. Our horses were gone, with the saddlebags containing all our food, gear, spare kit, and dollars. And we were a day's march from Lake Tana, and heaven knew how far from Queen Mastiat's camp. "Well, at least we can put our finances in order," says I. "Like old Ali Baba, we've lain doggo while the 40 thieves cacheted their loot. Now all we have to do is find it and fill our pockets." She hadn't heard the old tale, so I told it to her while we fossicked about. She was much taken with Morgiana's boiling the robbers in oil, I remember. The cachet was easy to find under a layer of rubble by the wall of the nave, and at the cost of skinned fingers and broken nails, we clawed up the loose earth to reveal a stout iron-shod chest. It wasn't locked, and when I heaved up the lid, we were looking at a sizable fortune in Maria Theresa's. Jewellery, wrought precious metal, gold pieces of a currency unknown to me, and carved ivory. We filled my pockets and her wallets with the gourchis, $100 apiece or thereabouts, and reluctantly abandoned the rest, except for a fine ebony-hafted Damascus scimitar, which I took, and various jewelled bangles, necklaces, and a gold fillet and veil, which Ulaba fell on with cries of delight. She was a very feminine Amazon, really, preening herself in a polished silver hand-mirror, and gloating as she threw it and other choice pieces into the cellar, so that the Sudanese would have to brave the scorpions to retrieve them, and lamenting that we couldn't capture the female and her young and enclose them in the chest before we reburied it, thus ensuring a jolly surprise for the returning robbers. Quite splendid in her malice she was. I'd not have been surprised if her braids had stood on end and hissed at me. Being famished, and not knowing how soon the Sudanese might come back, we made speedy tracks out of Gondar. From a vantage point on the south wall of the ruined palace, we could survey the country as far as Lake Tana, some 40 miles away, a distant gleam of silver in the morning sun, its forested shore stretching away into the haze. The sooner we were under cover in those woods, the better. So we travelled at the Highlander's pace, a mile at the trot and a mile at the stride, followed by a moment's rest standing, and then away again. Ulaba ran like a Diana, and I like a labouring bullock, but not too bad for 45, and within the hour we were in sight of a village of the plain called Azez, which I supposed we should avoid. But Ulaba said the time for concealment was past now, that we were afoot, and besides, we'd get no news of Mastiat if we continued to skulk in rocks and bushes. "We must seek it out, in a safe place where there are safe people to question. No, not in the village." We had stopped in a grove some way short of the little cluster of thatched huts, and she was shading her eyes to scan the low hills beyond. "There should be a monastery over yonder, of monks of St. Antonius the Hermit, if the wars have passed them by. Monks know everything."
"And if they recognize you?"
They could pass word to this fellow Gobazi, who's after you, or even to Theodore.
We've seen no trace of Gobazi. No one will recognize me this far south.